This is number 0004, the Stuff File podcast with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's radio that doesn't fly through the air. Coming from your computer and right into your ear, it's the Stuff File podcast with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there. Yes, it is indeed me, Peter Anthony Holder, and this is another edition of the Stuff File podcast, number 0004. And coming up, we have a lot of special guests on this week's show. From the entertainment world, as a matter of fact, we'll meet Robert J. Sawyer, the author of Flash Forward, which is now a hit show on ABC. And now that it's a big hit, well, everybody wants to know what happens next.
My goodness, everybody wants to know the secrets. And I suppose I'm one of the few people on the planet who does. Not even the actors know. The show is produced by a team of writers in a thing called the Writer's Room in Hollywood, where they all plan out what's going to happen to each character in each episode. And there's a big board that has the whole season marked out on it for every character, what's going to happen to them in each episode. And I've read the board. I know what's going to happen, but I can't say a word to anybody about it, which is the way it should be. You know, nobody wants to be the person who spoils. That's why we call it that, a spoiler, who spoils somebody else's joy in watching a television program. We should not be giving away things. We should not be tipping our hands. And a little anticipation is good for the soul, Peter.
We'll also meet actress Yvette Nicole Brown, one of the stars of the new NBC sitcom Community. She and the rest of the cast have meshed together quite well in a short period of time.
You know what? It was amazing from the beginning, and I've been blessed to work on a lot of shows and have had great experiences on set, but I don't think I've ever gelled this quickly with a group of actors. Like, we're all unique and crazy in our own way and silly in our own way, but everybody's silly meshes well with everybody else's silly, which is, you know, very unique. And so when we're doing a lot of the study room scenes where we're all around the table together, we just enjoy watching each other work. So we're just giggling at each other's silliness throughout the entire tape.
We'll check the mailbag.
Incoming subspace signal.
And we'll also hear from Steve Walsh, our man in the heart of America, checking the pulse of the nation.
Hey, if you want me to go to your website and you want me to maybe buy something from your website, here's a simple, simple suggestion. Keep it easy. Don't give me something difficult to remember. Hi, this is Steve Walsh. You know, your guy in the heart of America, checking the pulse of the nation. You're going to want to stick around for my two-minute tirade tonight. It's at www.twominutetirade.com. That's coming up later on the Stuff File podcast with Peter Anthony Holder.
Plus, we have lots and lots of stuff, because this is the Stuff File podcast, including an idiot of the day. By the way, this week's slate at the top of the show, the Slater, that's what we call them, I guess, on the program, the person who tells you which number of the show this is. This week's guest Slater is Kristen Jerome, who does a show on Q92 here in Montreal. It's a late night show. I know what it's like to work late night. Her show is on from midnight to 5 a.m., and the unofficial title of the show is Stay Up All Night with CJ on the Q. Now, when I did an overnight show, it was called Holder Tonight. So every late night show seems to have some sort of double entendre. It's interesting how that works. In any case, you can hear Kristen Jerome on Q92, as I said, midnight to 5 a.m., and you can check out their website, 925theq.com. I guess you could say that since she was on, or is on, from midnight to 5, and I was on from midnight to 3, that we were kind of competitors. And I guess you could say that since she's still on and I'm not, she won. There you go. Thank you, Kristen, for doing the slate for us on the program. And by the way, it just so happens that the slates have been done by people who are in some way, shape, or form either celebrities or guests on the show, and that's not necessarily the intent. I plan to have family members do the slate in the future. I plan to have maybe even my mailman do the slate in the future. It'll always be someone different. That's all I can say. But it's not always someone necessarily in the public eye. It just so happens that that's how it's worked out for the first few shows that we've done, but that's not the way it will be in the future. In any case, shall we get to the Stuff File? Yes, let's get to it right away. And we start off with a story. A fellow by the name of Jeffrey Fennell, who was 39, was drunk when he pulled out his assault rifle in his home in Ventura, California, and started shooting. That's what his wife said. That, of course, brought police, who engaged Fennell in a four-hour shootout. Fennell fired more than 50 rounds before he was himself shot by SWAT officers. He survived the wound in his shoulder, and no officers or bystanders were hurt. That's a good thing, because it's an idiot with a gun, a drunk idiot with a gun, shooting at people. And luckily, he was the only one that was injured, and it was not life-threatening. Well, his wife, Julie Greenleaf, filed claims with the city, demanding $759 for bullet holes in her house, which she says were made when officers returned fire, $32,000 for her husband's medical bills, and $650,000 for future medical expenses and loss of earnings. After police called the claims ludicrous and refused to pay, good for them, Greenleaf reduced the claim to $250. How about this, Julie? Would nothing work for you? Nothing? Because that's what you're going to get. Nothing. Nothing at all. On to a story we like to headline, Bad Nanny. When a woman dropped her Chevy Malibu off at a repair shop in Winona, Minnesota, she told the mechanic, "Oh, by the way, I have a goat in my trunk." James Prushy figured he didn't hear her right. A what?" he said. "Yes, a goat, and it's alive," she said. And then she left the shop. "We cracked open the trunk, you know, so it could breathe," Prushy said. The goat, painted purple and gold, the colors of the Minnesota Vikings, had a number 4 shaved in its sides, the jersey of Brett Favre, who is now playing for the Vikings after unretiring again, and bears the number 4. Anyway, Prushy called Animal Control for advice, and they sent the police. Prosecutors are considering charges against Janelle Riopel, who is 21, for animal mistreatment, and a local farmer has adopted the goat. That's what we call bad nanny. Meanwhile, a policeman in Helsingborg, Sweden, stopped when he noticed 2 men tussling on the sidewalk. "We're just swapping trousers," one explained. "No way," the other said. He was walking down the street when the 26-year-old jumped him, yanked off his pants, and tossed a pair of sweatpants at him in exchange. The officer determined that the assailant had been refused entry at a nearby pub because he wasn't properly dressed, and apparently decided that the passing victim wore the right size for him. The unnamed man was made to swap the pants back and then arrested for theft. If you think that's weird, you should see him after he's had a few drinks. Wow. Okay, there are some people out there who just never seem to accept responsibility for things that take place in their life, and we have a few stories like that right now. A 60-year-old highway worker was injured when struck by motorist Catherine Stotts, age 62, who was speeding down a blocked-off road construction lane near Willits, California, back in July. The worker required hospitalization, but Stotts complained about receiving a traffic citation, telling officers that the man could have jumped out of the way faster. Really? That's the excuse she's going with? Not the fact that she was in a road that was closed to her in the first place? Oh, it's not her fault. The guy didn't jump out of the way. Meanwhile, Alexander Cabellas, age 31, was arrested for slashing tires on almost 50 vehicles in Boulder, Colorado, back in May, but offered several explanations, including being overwhelmed by radiation from the nearby Rocky Flats nuclear facility and having been forced by his mother to wear braces on his teeth as a child. That's his excuse. You know, actually, you know, you could put the two together. Maybe the metal in his mouth while they live next to the... Oh, never mind. It's just an excuse. Meanwhile, under the headline of People with Issues, 3 physicians reporting in the Canadian Journal of Urology back in July, and we read them all for this program, folks, described how they handled an emergency room patient who arrived with a ballpoint pen in his urethra. Yes, it's where you think it is. The man, 57, had assumed that the insertion would be pleasurable, and when it wasn't, thought initially that maybe the pen was not in far enough. After pushing further, by the way, I sense all the guys who are listening to this right now are crossing their legs. I know I am. Anyway, after pushing it further to even greater discomfort, he thought that if he pushed it all the way through, it would exit in his rectum where he could remove it more easily. Anybody out there remember high school biology? Yeah, the two are not connected in any way. Doctors removed the pen with the same procedure used to remove kidney stones.
Ooh.
And this is really weird and takes stalking to an entirely new level. Sky level, to be exact. Police in Concord, California have arrested pilot Tim Huey and accused him of stalking his ex-girlfriend by repeatedly flying his plane low over her house. Sergeant Tiffany Leftwich says Huey made several low passes over a residential neighborhood. A dozen residents call police to complain. Huey was arrested shortly after landing the Beech single-engine aircraft. Police have been investigating reports of a low-flying plane in the area for more than a year. Huey's girlfriend filed for a restraining order last year, but he was not served until about 2 weeks ago. Yeah. Justice does not necessarily always move swiftly. In fact, it sometimes rarely does. But anyway. And let's talk about lovers, shall we? Yes. Congratulations, German friends. You've been voted the worst lovers in the world. A website called onepoll.com. And by the way, that's P-O-L-L. Get your mind out of the gutter, folks. Asked 15,000 women from 20 countries to rate nations on their bedroom skills and to give reasons for their answers. Germans were the worst in bed because they were considered too smelly. English lovers came second because they were too lazy, while men from Sweden were branded too quick and came in third. Well, if they're too quick, maybe they didn't. Never mind. Spanish men were voted the world's very best lovers, followed by Brazilians and Italians. Other findings include tidbits like Dutch men were too rough, Americans were too dominating, and Greek men were too sloppy. Other countries who didn't fare well were Scotland, too loud, Russia, too hairy, and Turkey, too sweaty, and also Wales, too selfish. There you go. Oh, still to come on the Stuff File podcast, we will hear from actress Yvette Nicole Brown from the television show Community. That's the new hit on NBC, starring Joel McHale and also Chevy Chase, and a whole bunch of other people on that show as well. We'll also hear from Steve Walsh, our man in the heart of America, checking the pulse of the nation. We'll also hear from our idiot of the day, along with a lot more stuff from the Stuff File podcast. But right now we have an interview with a famed science fiction writer, and we do it, thanks to modern technology, via Skype to Skype. On with us right now is Robert J. Sawyer, science fiction writer and the man behind what is now a hit show on ABC, Flash Forward. It's from his book, and he joins us from Toronto. Hi, Robert. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you, Peter?
I'm fine. Thanks for being on with us.
It's my pleasure.
So it's a week after, at least at the time of this taping, it's a week after your show first aired. It is in the top 20. How do you feel?
I feel fantastic, I must say. The ratings have been tremendous. We won our time slot in the United States. We won our time slot in Canada. And just last night, you and I speak, we had our debut in Great Britain, and we won our time slot there. So we're a bona fide hit, and I'm just absolutely thrilled about that.
Now, you have written science fiction for a long time. You have been very, very good at promoting what you do. You have your website. You have your newsletter. So your fans are out there, and they know what to expect from you. But now that the show is aired on television, has it been different, the reaction you get from people, either on your blog or your website or even in public?
The difference has been one of quantity. Qualitatively, people are saying nice things. Well, they've always said nice things. But quantitatively, my goodness, yes, I've been overwhelmed. You and I, in setting up this interview, I missed a message that you had sent to me because my backlog of getting to my messages is now running instead of, you know, I try to keep right on top of them, but I'm 4 or 5 days behind on keeping up because so many people are contacting me. All of them just say how much they love the show, which is very gratifying.
Excellent. Now, One of the things, though, I'm sure you might be hearing from some people is the fact that since it's an ongoing saga, unlike a book, you can pick up a book and keep reading it till you want to put it down. And if you really, really want to find out what happens next, you just keep reading. But on television, you have to wait for the next episode. Are people coming to you saying, what's happening? What's going to happen?
Oh, yes, my goodness. Everybody wants to know the secrets. And I suppose I'm one of the few people on the planet who does. Not even the actors know. The show is produced by a team of writers in a thing called the writer's room in Hollywood, where they all plan out what's going to happen to each character in each episode. And there's a big board that has the whole season marked out on it for every character, what's going to happen to them in each episode. And I've read the board. I know what's going to happen, but I can't say a word to anybody about it, which is the way it should be. You know, nobody wants to be the person who spoils. That's why we call it that, a spoiler, who spoils somebody else's joy in watching a television program. We should not be giving away things. We should not be tipping our hands. And a little anticipation is good for the soul, Peter.
Absolutely. Now, a lot of times you hear stories of writers, authors who have their stuff adapted either to the big screen or the small screen, and they're not happy. But I suspect that you're happy with how this turned out.
Well, how could you not be happy? I mean, everybody who's seen the show just loves it. The cast is phenomenal. We have Joseph Fiennes and John Cho, bona fide movie stars leading our cast. The director of the pilot and the next episode, for that matter, is David Goyer, a bona fide motion picture director. The pilot was written by David Goyer and Brannon Braga, two of the best science fiction writers for television and film out there. The whole thing is the special effects are being done by Kevin Blank, who did Cloverfield and does the effects for Lost. I mean, from top to bottom, it's been a first-rate production. Now Mark Guggenheim has come on board to lead the writing staff, and he has sterling credentials for Eli Stone and other projects. So, yeah, the thing is brilliant. How could I not like it? I'm absolutely thrilled.
I was actually talking to somebody earlier this week, which was rather interesting. Actually, it was a tweet somebody put up, and it's somebody who I know who's a fan of your books and has read all of them and really enjoys your work. And he said in his tweet, I enjoyed watching the show. As a matter of fact, I think I may have even liked it more than the book.
Well, I don't want to hear that. I mean, it's all a question of bandwidth. The book, you know, basically, here's the bottom line. We've got one of the best cinematographers, Kramer Morgenthau, did the cinematography on the pilot. Great directors, great special effects people, great actors reading the lines. Everything, though, is given to you on as a package when you watch a TV show, or a movie for that matter. There's no room for your interpretation. There's no room for you making your own pictures in your own head. So it all depends not on whether I did a great job as a writer. I think I did. The book never would have made into a TV series had it not had enough chops. The question is whether you, as the reader, are a better cinematographer than Kramer Morgenthau, or a better director of action than David Goyer, or a better reader of lines than Joseph Fiennes, or a better special effects conjurer than Kevin Blank. And I suppose for a large number of readers, they aren't going to be better than those wonderful craftspeople that brought it to life for television. So there you have it. There's also no doubt that the TV series skews towards the action adventure, and my novel skews towards the philosophical and intellectual. And that's, I don't think one is better than the other, but one certainly has a different, will hit you at a different time or a different place in your life in a different way.
Now, I understand that you're actually writing one of the scripts for the show.
That's correct.
So how do you have to change your mindset from what you've written for your characters and how ABC and the producers of the show are writing for your characters?
The bosses are Mark Guggenheim and David Goyer. It's their show now, and I'm lucky enough to play in their playground when it comes to writing a script for the series. Most people who sell film rights have no involvement, or television rights, have no involvement after the project is done. I grew up watching The $6 Million Man and its spinoff, The Bionic Woman, probably the most successful science fiction television franchise ever based on a book. The author of those books, Martin Caden, never wrote one line of dialogue for the show, never wrote a single script for the series. I'm involved in a much more intimate way and have been from day one, and I'm delighted for that. But this is Mark and David's show now. I'm happy to be participating in it. You know, if they want to come and and be in one of my novels one day, I'm God of that, and they'll have to do what I want. As long as I want to be part of the TV show that their boss is up, I do what they need to have done. And I'm privileged to be working with such talented people.
Now, I understand, I saw it. You had your Alfred Hitchcock moment. You were in the pilot.
I was, and I tell you, I was on set for the pilot and had no thought of having a cameo, and I don't think David Goyer was thinking about having a cameo. Why should he be so focused on getting the vision that was in the script committed to film in the very tight time frame that you have for television? You don't have months of shooting. You have days of shooting. But I happened to be sitting next to, behind David, there are a couple of director's chairs on set, and one was occupied by me, and one ended up being occupied by an ABC executive named Nay Ebong, who was in charge of dramatic television for ABC, including Lost. And she said, "Oh, who are you? I'm the writer of the book." "Oh, well, we must put you on the in a scene." And basically, if Nay Ebong snapped her fingers, things happen. And instantly, it was blocked out that I would be in a scene. The reason it's such a small little cameo was never planned. And it was literally thrown together for the moment where Nay said, "Let's have this happen," to, you know, half an hour later, I'm in front of the cameras doing a little bit of business in the background of a scene.
Excellent. Now, besides the obvious of a paycheck, and I won't go there because that's rude to discuss these kind of things, how does having a hit television show on an American network affect you creatively and the work of Robert J. Sawyer?
What it does is it brings me a whole new audience. There are all kinds of people who are buying the novel Flash Forward right now who have never read me before. The hope is that they'll say, "Hey, I like this book," and we'll go and buy another Rob Sawyer novel. And in fact, that's turned out to be the reality. I was just talking to my agent in New York, and he had noted that not just the Flash Forward novel is selling better than it was a year ago this time a year ago, but all of Rob Sawyer's novels are selling better than they were this time a year ago. There's been an uptick in the brand because of the recognition factor that goes with being involved with a TV series. We also just sold Portuguese rights to Flash Forward, Romanian rights to Flash Forward. I've not been in either of those. Hungarian rights, forgive me, Hungarian rights. I've been in Romanian before. Hungarian rights and Portuguese rights just sold a couple of days ago. We just sold Russian rights today to the Flash Forward novel. This is gigantic in terms of giving my books a new audience. Flash Forward has gone to a lower rank that is closer to one than any novel I've ever had on Amazon.com. It's just terrific.
Excellent. Well, congratulations on the success. The show, of course, is Flash Forward. It's on ABC at 8 p.m. on Thursdays. And in Canada?
On A, which is CTV's secondary network. We were all a bit surprised because CTV, of course, had to pay quite deeply and dearly to acquire the Canadian rights for Flash Forward. And people had always thought of A, you know, A is like CKVR and Barrie, for instance, the smaller stations in the CTV empire. And people had always thought of that as kind of, you know, the B list of stuff. Well, CTV is trying to combat that. So they've got Flash Forward, their most expensive fall acquisition, and Grey's Anatomy and a number of other good linchpin programs they've acquired for A or moved over to A to try and really beef up the channel. And as I say, we won our time slot in Canada, so we're doing just fine.
Excellent. Well, thank you very, very much for being on the show. And again, congratulations with the success of Flash Forward, and may it run for several years to come.
I want to flash forward 10 years in the future and see it still on the air. Thank you, Peter.
Take care.
My pleasure, my friend.
Robert J. Sawyer, the man behind Flash Forward. And we should mention his website. You can visit his website at www.sfwriter.com. That's www.sfwriter.com. And we didn't mention his latest book, which I believe is his 18th. It's called Wake, or www.wake. That's the latest book by Robert J. Sawyer.
This is the Stuff File Podcast with Peter Anthony Holder.
And still to come on the podcast, actress Yvette Nicole Brown from the NBC television series Community, the new hit sitcom. Also, Steve Walsh, our man in the heart of America, checking the pulse of the nation. We'll check the mailbag a little later on, too, plus have the idiot of the day and a lot more stuff. As a matter of fact, we have stuff right here, right now. And we start off this section with a story from Gainesville, Florida. no one expects a zombie apocalypse, but the University of Florida is making sure officials are ready for a night of the living dead, just in case. The school has a plan for responding to the undead on its website, among outlines for dealing with hurricanes and pandemics. The exercise lays out how university officials would respond to attacks by flesh-eating, apparently life-impaired individuals. It notes that a zombie outbreak might include documentation of lots of strange moaning. A University of Florida spokesman says the exercise was written by an employee to, quote, add a little bit of levity to disaster preparation discussions. You gotta have a sense of humor. You have to. Otherwise, life just ain't worth living, okay? Now, some people think too much. This next guy might be one of them. A male Swedish college student named Ragnar Bengtsson, age 26, has begun pumping his breasts at three-hour intervals in a 90-day experiment to see if he can produce milk. If he succeeds, he says it could prove very important for men's ability to get much closer to their children at an early stage. A professor of endocrinology told the Daily newspaper there that male lactation without hormone treatment might produce, quote, a drop or two, but suggested that men instead consider offering their breasts to babies as a matter of comfort and warmth rather than as food. Meanwhile, Ragnar, who will report regularly on his progress via Stockholm's TV8 channel and the station's website, acknowledged that his timetable would sometimes require that he pump during classes. A television station and its website are covering this? And you think North American reality television shows are bad and lame? Wow. Lactating men. Eesh. There's great viewing for you, huh? Got milk? Okay. Here's a story of true love defined. Want to know what true love is? Check out the story of Aaron Cole. Now, Cole is a 24-year-old college student from Grass Lake, Michigan, and he was headed to Maine for a vacation with his 22-year-old girlfriend, Shelly Johnson. Now, while in New Hampshire, they saw a beautiful waterfall and decided to check it out. Cole started fooling around by walking in the water, which was a big mistake. He slipped and fell, then careened down the waterfall about 120 feet, bashing his head on the rocks. When he came to a stop, he lay bloody and unconscious, face down in a pool of water. He wasn't breathing by the time Johnson reached him. Being a nursing student, she immediately gave him mouth-to-mouth and then slipped out of her bikini, using it to bandage the gashes on his head. Y'all have the visual of this, right? Okay. She then carried him down the hill. It took them 45 minutes to climb. Most of the way, she cradled him, talked to him, and tried to keep him conscious. While Johnson is very athletic and a state champion hurdler at Grass Lake, it defies explanation that she, at 115 pounds, carried a 160-pound man so far. She says it was adrenaline and God. Amazingly, the first people to find them were an intensive care nurse and an emergency room nurse. Cole was then airlifted to Dartmouth Hitchcock Medical Center, where he was treated in intensive care for 2 days, but had no permanent brain damage. Man, I hope he never tries to break up with her. Wow. He owes her a lot. And I hope she's not the kind of person who is going to remind him about it for the rest of his life. But wow, there is a story of true love. Ain't that grand? Anyway, moving right along, joining us on the program is actress Yvette Nicole Brown. Now, she is a fine character actress with an impressive resume of work, but she can now be seen regularly in the new NBC hit comedy Community, which also stars Joel McHale and Chevy Chase, among others. She plays the role of Shirley, one of the members of the Community College Study Group. Hi, Yvette. It's nice to talk to you again.
Hey, Peter. It's my pleasure. I'm excited to talk to you again as well.
And you must be very, very excited being part of what is sure to be a hit television series.
Yeah, you know, I can't believe my luck. I think the last time we talked, I was kind of floating around as a journeyman actor. So it's amazing that I've landed somewhere. It's a great blessing.
Yeah, we spoke to you back in February on the old radio show that I did. And again, I mentioned at that time that you had such an impressive resume that it was just a matter of time that something big would break for you. And it looks like this could be it.
Yeah, it was, I think, what, maybe 2 months later, I auditioned for this. And we started filming in April and then came back to do the series in June. July. So it's been a great run. And you were one of the first ones to say it's only a matter of time.
Excellent. So you shot how many episodes? 5?
No, we're starting our 8th episode on Monday.
Okay, so have you discovered things about your character, Shirley, along the way?
You know what? I'm discovering her as we go along. She's a lot. I knew that she was nurturing, but she really does have a heart for all the other characters. And I'm also finding out that she's flawed. Like, as people watch the show, they'll realize that Shirley has a couple of things that she does that are not great. So she's learning to be a little less judgmental, I think, and it's probably helping me as a human being as well.
The last episode I saw, which I guess is the 2nd episode, you had a line in there which just cracked me up. We need to bust out that brownie mix.
Yeah, Shirley is apparently in school. I just found out she's in school to be a kind of a Martha Stewart. So she's studying marketing so that she can market her baked goods. So that was the second episode, the first time we find out exactly why Shirley's love is and why she's back in community college.
What was it like when you came together with that group of actors that currently make up Community?
You know, it was amazing from the beginning, and I've been blessed to work on a lot of shows and have had great experiences on sets, but I don't think I've ever gelled this quickly with a group of actors. Like, we're all unique and crazy in our own way and silly in our own way, but everybody silly meshes well with everybody else's silly, which is, you know, very unique. And so when we're doing a lot of the study room scenes where we're all around the table together, we just enjoy watching each other work. So we're just giggling at each other's silliness throughout the entire take.
I know the show's only been on for 2 episodes. You say you're only working on the 8th episode right now. It's a very short period of time. But in that short period of time, looking around the room at the cast of characters that you have, who would you say is most like their character? And who would you say is least like their character?
Oh, that's funny. The thing about our writers and our creator, Dan Harmon, that's great is that he's really, the line between who we are as people and who these characters are, it's really blurred at this point, 8 shows in. So, sadly, we're all like our characters now, which I say sadly because, again, these characters, all the characters in the show are like a little crazy, and we as human beings are all a little crazy. So, I would say the most like the character is probably Joel, because Joel is very, he's like the snarkiest, nice person you'll ever meet. So he always has like a little smart alecky comment, but he's so charming and cute that you let it pass. And so he's probably the most like his character, except that he has more heart than Jeff Winger does.
Ah, okay. Now, in looking around and seeing how the show has progressed in the time that you've been on it, can you see yourself literally saying, I mean, assuming that it's a hit and it goes on, can you see a long run in this? Do you feel comfortable with these characters that you could play them for several years?
I definitely feel comfortable with the actors and the writers and the directors, and I would want to be on this show for as many years as the viewing public will let us. And I do think that there's legs to this show because everybody, we have every race, every gender, every age group represented, and, you know, everybody comes from a different segment of society. So there's, like, so many different ways that the show could go. So I hope that it could be on for years and years. And if it is, I definitely would love to be a part of it.
You, as I mentioned in the introduction, you're a character actress, and you've been in so many television shows and every second commercial. I'm just wondering now, but it's a situation where I'm sure people don't necessarily know the name Yvette Nicole Brown because of the diversity of roles and the character acting that you've done. Is that starting to change for you?
That's definitely changing for me. I was in New York recently, and I was flying back and coming to the security, and one of the TSA officers called me by name, and I'm thinking, that's weird because I didn't show my ID or anything going through the metal detector, and I realized, oh, my God, he recognized me from the credit of the show. Like, that's the only way he would be able to connect my name and my face. So apparently he saw my name in the credits of the show and knew who I was, and he said, Yvette, I love Community. And I was like, wow, okay, I'm not Hey You or Aren't You the Girl From. I actually know my name now, which is very new to me and very nice.
Yeah, you were in New York recently, and I was reading one of your tweets that you were in the audience at The View.
Yes, Joel McHale was doing The View, and I'm friends with Sherry Shepherd, and I was actually in New York for that week to hang out with Sherry and go as she did her new show. She's got a new show on Lifetime called Sherry, and I was going to kind of hang out with her, and they were kind enough to put me in the audience, and right before the show ended, Barbara Walters said my name, and the camera caught a shot of me behind the ladies on the big screen. I'm like, my life is so surreal right now. And I have to thank Whoopi Goldberg for that, actually, because Whoopi was like, you know, we didn't get a shot of you that. And I'm like, I can't believe, first of all, that Whoopi Goldberg even knows who I am and that she will be kind enough to make sure that, you know, my face made it on while Joel was on the show. So I'm really grateful to Whoopi for that. And she's a sweetie pie, and Sherry and everybody are just great on The View.
When it comes to actors and actresses, people seem to get people confused all the time. You mentioned that you're a good friend of Sherry Shepherd. And you're both very funny women, both actresses. Have you ever been confused for each other?
Me and Sherry are confused for each other all the time. I've been with Sherry, and someone said to me, I love you on The View. I'm like, really? That's interesting, because she's right next to me. That's really interesting. So I don't know if it's weird. I don't know if we just look that much alike, or if we just have the same energy, but people always think that she's on Drake and Josh, and they always think I'm on The View. And hopefully now that I'm on Community, they'll be able to differentiate the two of us. And also, I wanted to say one more thing. Bill Getty was very instrumental in letting me get that little shout out on The View as well, so I don't want to forget him.
I think you just touched on it. I think it's the energy, and that's one of the things that always comes through in all the work you do. It's the energy.
I think, you know, it's so funny. I play a lot of really snarky kind of characters. Usually they're kind of disgruntled in some way. And I've been really surprised that people still like me as an actress. And I'm hoping that maybe my natural kindness comes through even through the midst of, a less than kind character. And I think that that's probably the same thing that me and Sherry have in common, that we both like people. And maybe that's what they're finding similarities in.
One of the other things, I mean, you're on many of the social networking platforms out there, and one of the things I've always noticed, your comments in the social networking platforms are always so positive, which is just great to see.
Say again?
Which is so great to see.
You know what? I've been so blessed, and I feel like if you're blessed with an opportunity to be in front of a lot of people and they happen to listen to you, you should have something good to say. So, I'm a Christian, so every time I get a chance to remind people how much God loves them and that good things are coming their way, I take that. And so I don't use Twitter or Facebook to go, hey, look at me, I'm fabulous. I use it to go, God thinks you're fabulous. Mm. And so if anybody can go to my page and be encouraged or reminded of the way he feels about them, then I think that's the purpose of me having however many followers or friends or whatever the term is on the other site. So that's what I use it for.
Excellent. You said you're very religious. So is Joel McHale, isn't he?
Yeah, Joel is actually, I hope I'm not outing him as a Christian, but yes, he actually is a very spiritual guy as well.
I read somewhere just a couple of days ago and found that very, very interesting indeed. It sounds like a fine cast for a fine show, and I wish you nothing but the best and an extremely long run, and Lord knows NBC needs it.
we're hoping that we can be one of the shows that turns NBC fortunes around. We would be honored to be one of those shows.
And it's nice to see a show, quite frankly, that you can laugh out loud at on your own without the benefit of a laugh track.
Yeah, and you know what's great about our show as well, what I love about our show is that we're hopefully funny, but we also have hearts. So like in every episode, and not in the, you know, hit you over the head with it, sentimentality, but there's going to be a moment where, you know, whatever someone did, if they do something wrong, there's going to be consequences on our show. And the end result is, you know, let's find a way back to be a community. And that's what I really like about it.
Excellent. Well, thank you, Yvette, for coming on to this humble little podcast in its beginnings. I thank you for taking the time to chat with us once again.
I'm honored, and I will say this publicly on your podcast. I've been interviewed by a lot of people, and you truly are the tops. So anytime you need me, I'm there.
Thank you very much. Take care.
All right, take care, Peter.
Actress Yvette Nicole Brown. You can see her on the new NBC comedy series Community, which airs on Thursday night on NBC. As the saying goes, check your local listings.
This is the Stuff File.
And it's time to check the mailbag. And by the way, my email address is peter@peteranthonyholder.com. You can also find me on Facebook and Twitter. Okay, let's check the mailbag, starting off with a message from Beverly. This came in via Facebook.
Incoming subspace signal.
She writes to say, good job, Peter. This format really works for me. Thank you. Things are getting back to tickety-boo. Yes, Beverly? Yes, they are. Thank you very much.
Incoming subspace signal.
Marie Paul also sent me a note via Facebook. Hi, Peter. Love the podcast. Any chance that you could have the Gabby Cabby and Stuart Nullman on the show? Well, Marie-Paul, the situation is that this is a once-a-week hourly podcast, so this show basically is 1/15th of what it used to be when I was on the radio, and something's got to give, so I don't know if they'll become regular features, but I might perhaps do something monthly or seasonally. I'll have to figure out the logistics to see if something like that is doable. But at the moment, I'm not sure, although I did have a word with Stuart Nullman because of your message. I sent him a message, and he's willing to do it. So we'll probably work something out in the very near future, maybe even sooner than you think.
Incoming subspace signal.
Marcus also sent me a note via Facebook. By the way, everything seems to be coming in by Facebook these days. Good day, sir. Just listened, to 0003, all smiles here. It's pretty much the same as Holder Tonight, sans traffic, news, and weather, and a whole lot clearer, a la FM. Are you going to have the Gabby Cabby on? Okay, well, since you asked about the Gabby Cabby, and also Marie Paul asked about the Gabby Cabby. Just before I went in to record this podcast, I actually spoke to Peter Franklin in New York, and he too agreed to do the podcast. I just don't know when we're going to work it out and when we're going to do it, but he will be on again. And again, as you know, with this podcast, it's just an hour-long thing, so all the features that used to be of a certain length will certainly be shorter, but we'll probably have Peter Franklin, the Gabby Cabby, on again as well. So, to answer both of your questions, Marie Paul and Marcus, yes, you will hear Stuart Nullman again, and most likely you'll hear Peter Franklin again. Just don't know how soon, but it will be soon enough. Trust me.
Incoming subspace signal.
And finally, in the mailbag section, Patrick also sent me a Facebook message. Thank you so much for your podcasts. I now have my whole family awake listening to them. I really enjoy listening to you, and I know your devotion to your fans by doing them. Talk radio is not cutting it anymore without you, so I get more sleep. Well, thank you very much for the kind words, Patrick. I have really nothing to add to that, except to say that I'm trying to build an audience, one person at a time, and make this podcast go viral. So, Patrick, and anyone else listening, please help by spreading the word. You can find the podcast on my website, on my blog, and also as a subscription on iTunes. Tell your friends, tell everybody, share your copy. Let's get the word out. And again, if you want to send me an email, peter@peteranthonyholder.com, or you can find me on Facebook, Peter Anthony Holder, or you can find me on Twitter as well. I'm Peter Anthony Holder. You're listening to the Stuff File podcast. Still to come, Steve Walsh, our man in the heart of America, checking the pulse of the nation, more Stuff File, and an idiot of the day.
Hi, this is Ben Patrick Johnson, voiceover actor, male model, and all-around nice guy, some days. When I'm not voicing blockbuster movie trailers, TV promos, or doing charity work like this, I also write novels. I have four of them out, and I know, it's a gift. Anyway, my latest novel is actually my most personal. It's called If the Rains Don't Cleanse, which tells the tale of missionaries in 1950s Belgian Congo, loosely based on my own parents. Everyone thinks you should read it, including me, of course. You can order it right now. It's just a mouse click away at Amazon.com or Amazon.ca. You'll find links for it, along with several reviews, on the podcast page at www.peteranthonyholder.com. Remember the title, If the Rains Don't Cleanse, by me, Ben Patrick Johnson. Buy a copy because, well, I got to be frank, doing voiceover liners for Peter Anthony Holder's podcast, it isn't exactly paying the bills. If the rains don't cleanse.
Now, Peter Anthony Holder once again brings you Steve Walsh, our man in the heart of America, checking the pulse of the nation. Lock up your daughters, and in West Virginia, your sheep. Joining Peter Anthony Holder is our intrepid embedded reporter, deep in the heartland of the U.S. of A., Stephen S. Walsh.
How you doing, Steve Areno?
I'm so happy I could take my life.
Whoa, that's
no,
a juxtaposition, an oxymoron.
Yeah, I'm kidding. Yeah, you wouldn't expect that, would you?
No.
No, I'm feeling fine. I'm kidding. I would never even contemplate doing that.
Good. I don't like to hear talk like that.
Okay. No, I feel fine. Just tired. That's all. Nah. It's been one of those rough weeks. You know how that goes.
I know how that goes. I've been busy all week too at Global News.
I know
News.
You have. Hard to believe, but you've been globalizing, haven't you?
I've been at Global News here in Montreal for the full week and the last week as well. Just the 2 weeks though, and then back to pounding the pavement, as the saying goes.
Back to the life of bliss. I've been there and I could be there again, you know?
Oh, my friend, it's never a life of bliss when one has a mortgage.
This is true.
Yes.
Absolutely. I understand that.
Yeah.
Boy.
Anyway, sir.
Yes?
What do you have for us this week?
Well, let's see. What do I have for you this week? I got it. Dateline, Imperial, Missouri.
That would be the Show Me State.
That's where I live, by the way.
Yes, I know.
Yep, I know. An Eastern Missouri man is dead. Dead, I tell you. After accidentally shooting himself while teaching firearm safety to his girlfriend. Yeah, 40-year-old James Looney is his name, of Imperial, died of a gunshot wound to the head. According to witnesses, Looney was demonstrating how to use the different safety mechanisms on several guns. Witnesses told authorities that Looney would put the guns to his head, ask his girlfriend if she thought the gun would go off, then pull the trigger. Well, the safety mechanisms worked for the first two guns, but the third gun fired. Looney died at a hospital.
Well, you know, I guess his girlfriend has definitely learned the lesson.
And what would that be, Peter?
Well, no, just the fact that he's a good teacher. He's trying to teach her gun safety. He's led by example.
Well, yeah, I think he might have taught her what not to do with a gun.
Well, there you go. Well, ergo, she now knows.
Ergo, point taken.
Yes.
I concede.
Okay.
Dateline, Belleville, Illinois.
Oh, the land of Lincoln.
Yeah, I never lived there.
Not yet.
Yeah, it's true. From Belleville comes this question. Who would pick up a hitchhiker carrying a chainsaw?
You know, there's a commercial like that on television now.
It depends whether he had a pack of Bud Light, right?
Exactly, yeah.
Well, at least one person would. A sheriff's deputy who was happy to give the guy a ride to jail. Police had responded to a burglary report at a residence, and the victims reported seeing a man in their garage who they last saw walking toward Illinois 15, that's the highway, carrying their chainsaw, which he stole. 42-year-old Donald Ayton was found hitchhiking on the highway with his thumb in the air. That's a good way to hitchhike, I guess.
Yeah.
So Deputy Russ Taylor, didn't he call the balls and strikes for the Expos at one time?
Back in 1969.
Back in the day.
Yeah.
Gosh. Anyway, Russ Taylor stopped and told him to put down the chainsaw and put his hands on the patrol car. Basically, a guy named Dave stepped in and said, "Put your hands up, up, and away!"
Oh, man.
Anyway, that was stretching, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Ayton asked the deputy if he was going to take him home, and the answer was, "Nope. I ain't taking you home. I got a wife there." No, seriously. He wasn't going to take the guy home. He took him to jail.
Yeah, you know the thing.
Which is what he should have done.
Absolutely. You know, the thing about a podcast is that it's a global entity. And, of course, the old radio show I did originated in Montreal. And was broadcast to Montrealers. So many of the listeners who are from Montreal or former Montrealers who are in Toronto will get that joke. The rest of the world, no clue what you were talking about with Up, Up, and Away, unless they happen to listen to the Florida Marlins.
Dave Van Horn. And Dave, was it last season or two seasons ago, I interviewed Dave at one of the ball games, came in, and he was very, very happy to do an interview, which I sent to you, and you played, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, I did. Yes, I did.
Yeah, that was good. Brought back memories for me, I'll tell you that.
Absolutely.
And you, I know, growing up watching the Expos in Jerry Park. Ah, memories. Gosh.
Steve?
Such is life.
Steve?
Yes.
Steve? It's a podcast, but there's still a clock.
Okay. Dateline, Mishicot, Wisconsin.
I'm sorry, were you just swearing?
No. I actually gave the name of a town up in Wisconsin.
Oh, because that would be...
Mishicot. Okay. Mishicot.
That would be the Badger State.
Or as we like to call it.
The Cheese State.
Where the motto is...
If it's cheddar...
It's better. A Wisconsin woman and her 5-year-old daughter got a foul visitor when an unwelcome wild turkey crashed through a bedroom window. Heidi Herrera said she was watching television with her daughter when the bird quickly charged into the living room of their home. Herrera got her daughter and their pet chihuahua to safety in another bedroom. That's right, got to save those chihuahuas from the wild turkeys. The mother then ventured out and found the turkey in the kitchen. When she walked toward it, the bird ran out the open front door and down the street, leaving behind feathers, blood, and glass scattered throughout the house. Wildlife biologist Aaron Buchholz of the State Department of Natural Resources said turkeys can't see windows, and the bird probably thought it could fly through the bedroom when it crashed through the window.
By the way, the name Heidi Herrera sounds like a stripper name in Texas.
It really does. I'd have met her, someone you'd run into and say, "What's your name?" And she'd say, "What do you want it to be?"
Ooh!
Dateline, Sandusky, Ohio.
Oh, no, Ohio. I can hardly wait to say goodbye.
Oh, there's that song.
Yeah, I know.
That's the Buckeye State.
Buckeye State.
Yes.
Did you know that?
Yes, I know.
Did you know that I used to live there?
Gosh, I can never forget that. You used to remind me of it all the time and how much you hated it.
The year of my life I'll never get back.
I know.
A 16-year-old boy was arrested for drug possession after his own mother turned him in. Apparently, it was just too much for her to take when she found the boy rolling a joint using a page from the Bible as his rolling paper of choice. The mother told deputies she had seen her son smoking in his room and discovered a small bag of marijuana in his nightstand. See?
Hmm.
Yeah, that Bible was smoking.
I'm just saying, at least you can't complain that he never opens his Bible.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
But I'm thinking usually, it ends with somebody being turned into a pillar of salt, not a puff of smoke.
There you go.
Such is life.
Yeah.
Dateline. Hey, you know what? Let's stay in Sandusky, Ohio.
Oh, no, Ohio. I can hardly wait to say goodbye.
Still the Buckeye State.
Still, I used to live there the year of my life I'll never get back.
Yep.
A woman who said she was unfaithful has chosen a very public way of asking her boyfriend not to break up their engagement. Jess Dutry, who's 19, stood outside a supermarket parking lot in northern Ohio with a handwritten sign that said, "I cheated," and "Honk if I deserve a second chance." On the back, Dutry had scrawled, "I honestly love him." She said she chose to stage her vigil after her fiancé took back his ring earlier that day when she confessed she had cheated on him this summer. It's not clear if he saw the message, but Dutry said dozens of people honked and some got out of their cars to hug her and wish her well.
Aww.
Isn't that nice?
That's so sweet.
I'll tell you, if she had cheated on me, I don't know, I'd still be upset.
I know.
I'd get angry.
You'd be angry with Amber. No, that makes no sense.
Yeah. And you know what I do when I get angry?
What do you do, Steve?
I take my usually it's a keyboard of some kind on a laptop in hand, and I write a 2-minute tirade.
Well, tirade away.
Well, that's what I've done here. I want to take a shot tonight at these lengthy and stupid email addresses and websites. You know the ones I'm talking about? Instead of the ever-popular peteranthonyholder.com or something along those lines, you're listening to the radio in the car when you hear an interesting story, and you're told that if you want more information, you can log on to the website at an address that includes backslashes and underscores and a bunch of letters that really don't flow. Enough! I can't take it anymore! Back in the old days when we used telephones a lot and more information was offered at a number, the number was an easy-to-remember word. Got calls, and it was unbelievable the way it worked. You know, the ones that were popular to remember, people called. The ones that weren't, people didn't. For instance, 1-800-KICK-MY-BUTT always got more calls than a phone with several random numbers put together. Why? Because it's the kind of number that has a word and is easy to remember. With the web, you don't have to remember numbers, just words or phrases. Much along the lines of 1-800-KICK-MY-BUTT, we now have kickmybutt.com or kickmybutt.org. These are easy to remember, but suppose it had a web address like kick_j_r_my_butt. Well, few people would ever go to the site because it's just too complicated to get there. For anyone contemplating opening a business online, please, please make sure the web address is user-friendly, and that means easy to remember. If you've seen Field of Dreams with Kevin Costner, and you're familiar with the phrase, if you build it, he will come, then you should also hear this phrase, if you make it difficult, Steve will not visit your site. I have too much in my life that's complicated to have to deal with more. Make my life easier.
That was the words of Steve Walsh from www.missourinet.com or learfield.typepad.com/missourinet.
And thank you for that. That's just, makes me feel so good now.
And by the way, both of those URLs that I just mentioned, especially, of course, missourinet.com, people can find on my website at peteranthonyholder.com. Go to the What's On page for the podcast, and you'll see the link, which will take you right to Steve's smiling face.
Yes, it will. I hope so.
Absolutely.
That's a good thing.
Absolutely.
I like to smile.
Steve?
Yes?
Say those three magic words.
Hit the theme!
This is the Stuff File.
And we're almost completely out of time on this week's edition of the Stuff File podcast. To wrap things up, we have enough time for the Idiot of the Day.
And now it's time for the Strange Things Adults Do. The Stuff File presents the Idiot of the Day.
A Connecticut psychic who said she was assaulted in an attack she believed was arranged by rival psychics. That's right, rival psychics, has been charged with lying about the incident. Oh, she should have saw this coming. Greenwich police arrested 35-year-old Janet Lee of Norwich on charges including falsely reporting an incident. Lee, who promotes herself as the foremost psychic in New England, that's like me saying I'm Ecuador's finest playwright. Who can check? Who cares? Called police on July 11th to report that a man had beaten her outside her Greenwich office. She said she believed rival psychics in town who had left her threatening phone messages were responsible, but did not know their names. Really? I think we're going to just remove from her the foremost psychic in New England banner, just for that last sentence alone. Greenwich police said there were inconsistencies in Lee's story, and they believe she may have been assaulted in Norwich by someone she knew. Lee's attorney said his client stands by her story. Why would someone go to all this trouble to give a story so filled with holes and yet call himself the foremost psychic in New England? There can only be one reason. She's an idiot.
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this week's edition of the Stuff File podcast with me, Peter Anthony Holder. Coming up on the next show, you will have a chance to hear Mark English, who runs Llama Caddies, a company that trains llamas to be golf caddies. Also, Tom Van Dale runs a website called changeofcards.com, which gives you some neat ideas for your old business cards after you've been fired. We'll hear from sexy Pope Benedict XVI and some Stuff File moments in history. The website, peteranthonyholder.com, where you'll find information and links on our guests on the What's On page. Just look for the corresponding date and podcast number, in this case 0004. Email me at peter@peteranthonyholder.com. You can also find me on Facebook and Twitter. Tell all your friends about the program. Let's get the word out. Thanks for being on this week's show with us. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Stuff File podcast with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. Any rebroadcast of this copywritten program in whole or in part without the express written consent of... Oh, my God, who the hell are we kidding? Who's going to steal this show? God, who writes this stuff? Holder, what a kidder.